Barbarian tribes of Rome, the Anglo-Saxons, Anglo-Saxon architecture. Medieval buildings were not as diverse as they are today, and we can classify them into two distinct categories, secular buildings and church buildings. Let's start with the secular buildings. However, the very term secular is a bit misleading since we are talking about everyday houses and halls. Perhaps a better term would be vernacular structures. However, the semantics of their name doesn't really matter, but their purpose does. Anglo-Saxons lived in very primitive houses. These houses came in two types, with the second, the above-ground house, later developing into a hall. The first type was the so-called sunken-featured building, or SFB for short. Initially, archaeologists simply called them pit houses, and at first glance, they do have an obvious feature of a pit house, namely a pit. However, SFBs are a bit more elaborate. We also know that these were not Roman or Celtic houses, since there is evidence of SFBs in modern Germany as well, even today. Here they have the common name Grubenhauser, translates into the grub houses or grub hut. A typical SFB has a simple thatched roof. Examples of wooden shingles or turf roofs also exist, but they were not that common back in the day. A simple roof would have had gables as well as a hole for the smoke to come out. The entire body of the house was usually made of wood, with main support posts rammed deep into the ground. And then there's the pit itself. Usually it would be dug into the floor and possibly covered by a wooden floor. Some speculated that this hole was used for storage, while others interpret the hole, SFB, to not be a house of a commoner, but a weaving shed. Remains of looms were found at a few of these SFBs, which seem to elaborate this fact. Most historians would agree that buildings like this could very well serve more than one purpose. The interior of these houses was simple. It was just one room where a family did everything. Slept, ate, received guests, and conversed regularly there. Churls would not nominally have beds, so they would simply sleep on floors. Even their cattle would spend the night inside the hut, which actually helped during the winter as extra bodies helped keep the temperatures higher. The house had no windows, while the toilets were merely pits in the ground outside the home that was surrounded by wattled walls. What we would call a toilet seat today was nothing more than a broad plank with a hole in it during Anglo-Saxon times. In terms of raw materials, above-ground houses were not much sturdier. They were usually built from wood as well. The big difference was the size. Above-ground houses would be far larger, usually rectangular or square. They would have a thatched roof with a hole in it, but unlike SFBs, these houses had windows. These early windows were merely halls and walls with no holes in the walls with no glass. They were even called eye holes. These houses were eventually evolve in the halls. During Anglo-Saxon time, a hall was an important building, considering it housed the local chieftain or king. Like much SFBs, halls had a single large room with a hearth in the middle. However, the sheer size of the hall gave it more features. For example, an entire wall would have been dedicated to keeping the cattle in for the winter. In addition, the walls were larger and taller, so Anglo-Saxon chieftains would decorate them with various trophies. Deer antlers were a popular choice, as we saw in food and drink section earlier. The halls would also feature shields and spears mounted on them. Halls had a great significance for a local populace. The king would summon his subject for feasts and celebrations after a war or during a festival. Women would pour mead or strong beer while game was roasted on open fire in the middle. After the meal was done, minstrels would sing songs of heroism, war, hunting, and everyday life. Halls were also places where chieftains planned battles, settled disputes, and generally performed their civic duties. Other times, they would just use them as another house. However, the halls weren't perfect. Their floors would be dirty and uneven, despite evidence that some of these had wooden floors. Because of how these halls were, they weren't immune to the smell or the noise from the outside. In other words, despite its high status in early Anglo-Saxon society, the hall was not the prettiest place to live in and was little more than your average house. Archaeologists still don't know a lot about these early Anglo-Saxon dwellings. However, there are places that provide us with enough detail for a basic idea. West Stowe, for example, is an open-air museum where we have archaeological remains of houses dating back to the Mesolithic era. A huge section of this site is reserved for early Anglo-Saxon dwellings, which have been reconstructed and can be visited even today. There were no less than 7 potential halls uncovered in this area, as well as various SFBs, potential animal dens, and other unidentified buildings. As stated, most of these dwellings were made of wood, so it's difficult to find any actual physical remains of the houses. However, early Anglo-Saxons did use stone for other types of building, and more often than not, they were for churches. As we saw, the earliest surviving church from the Anglo-Saxon period was St. Martin's Church in Canterbury. Before it was rebuilt by Augustine, it was a private chapel used by Queen Bertha of Kent. Augustine did major reconstruction on the church, but wouldn't live to see it finished. Of course, it's far from being the only church from this period as well. Looking at St. Martin's Church and other contemporary buildings, we can spot a few key elements on how they were built. For instance, the quions, or cornerstones, were usually arranged on a long and short pattern. To elaborate, the pattern consists of alternating horizontal and vertical stones. The Minster Church of St. Mary's is a perfect example of how these stones look in practice. In fact, these slim vertical stones are called pilaster strips and are one of the most common features of Anglo-Saxon church architecture. Most of these churches would have had double triangular windows on the western side of the nave, which is the central part of the church. Other church windows would be narrow and have rounded arches, and most of the time, when masons built these arches, they simply reused Roman stones during the construction. Their walls were made using herringbone stonework, and they had a narthex, or west porch, opposite the main altar. We should note that churches of this era rarely had more than one of the features listed here. Northern churches had a more Celtic design to them, being very narrow with no aisles, and a rectangular chancel, a part near the altar separated from the nave by a screen or stairs. On the other hand, each of the southern churches of this period, like the ones in Kent, were small and had a simple layout based on a Roman basilica. It had rounded chancels in the east of the building and plain-looking walls. Only with the Norman invasion would the rulers begin to rebuild the churches, making them much more elaborate and grander in size and scale. One interesting detail about Northern Anglo-Saxon church architecture, in particular, was the stone crosses. Many of these crosses would be found at crossroads in places like Durham, Blakewell, Bewcastle, Gosford, Inkley, Irton. Like the surviving churches of the north from that period, these large stone crosses had Celtic designs, which suggests an influence of the local Britons on the settling Anglo-Saxons. The crosses weren't a part of any building, but were built next to public road intersections and other roadside areas. If we take into account that the early Anglo-Saxons and Britons were pagans who worshipped their gods by venerating massive pillars and trees, this could easily explain why the crosses wound up there in the first place. Even Pope Gregory I urged Augustine to simply repurpose the old religious sites in the Christian churches and places of prayer. Church officials could easily have replaced these pillars with stone crosses, since the place itself had already had a heavy religious significance to local pagans. At the time, even entire churches were built right next to or even around these crosses. Of course, there were a few secular buildings made of stone that weren't churches. For example, local Anglo-Saxons didn't want to live in old Roman settlements, opting to build their own houses closer to arable farmland or rivers with plentiful fish. The more these settlements grew, the bigger their need was to have some sort of protection. As such, they would construct stone fortifications to defend themselves against invading Vikings. These fortifications were called burhs, and sadly, none remain standing to this day. However, archaeologists suggest that St. George's Tower at Oxford, dating back to the 11th century, was actually part of a larger defense structure that surrounded the local burh at the time. Now, next time, we're going to look at Anglo-Saxon travel. Now, the sources for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture, by Owens, Attila the Hun, by Worrell, The Burgundians, by Charles River, The History of the Ostrogoths, by Burns, and The History of the Vandals, by Jacobson, as well as The History of the Barbarians. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.